So, as a lot of you know, this year we're doing a series on the paramis, and our topic for this month is nekkhama or renunciation. And so, to get us started on this parami, I'm going to offer you an introduction to this topic and talk a little bit about the different ways that we can approach renunciation and how it's important for us in our practice. And we're a little bit short-handed this month, so I'm going to be presenting this in two talks. So the first one, I'm going to be taking my lead from Ajahn Suchito and the way that he talks about renunciation in his book on the paramis. So this week I'm going to talk about renunciation more as a support for the work we've been doing already these past couple of months. Practicing generosity and sila and really, learning how to live a kind and generous and ethical life that benefits us and benefits others. And then the next week, I'll talk more about how the practice of renunciation can be an important doorway to wisdom and really understanding the deepest truths of the Dharma. So I think thanks to Ajahn Suchito, it helped me to see that there was plenty of material here to talk about over a couple weeks. So to start off with today, let's consider some of the ideas we might have about renunciation. And it might not be a parami that initially we approach with a whole lot of enthusiasm, and this isn't really too surprising. If we look at how renunciation is defined in the dictionary, it's described as abstaining from, refraining from, giving up, going without. So we might naturally associate it with deprivation and think of it as something that's difficult and painful. It might suggest that we have to give up everything that's provides us with fun and pleasure. Or we might think of renunciation as a sort of a penance, maybe, where we have to do without things that we would want to do or want to have as a sort of punishment for being a bad person. Or we might think of it as a set of acts we do to make ourselves pure and saintly. Or maybe when we think about renunciation, the first thing that comes to our minds is the life of a monastic, where one gives up the pleasures and distractions of ordinary life and renounces the world. And in that sense, it might feel like it's something that's, really far from us in our daily life and a practice that maybe is beyond us, then we can't really see ourselves pursuing. Now, I don't think we're alone if we have these kinds of feelings about renunciation. And to illustrate this, I'm going to start with a story from the Tapusa Sutta. And in this story, the Buddha, after going on his alms rounds, went into the woods near the town where they were staying to practice his meditation. And he left Ananda at the area where the monks were staying in the near the town to tend to any visitors that might come. So after a while, Tapusa, who is a was a householder in the town, showed up with some questions about the Dharma. And so he bowed to Ananda and sat down beside him, and then he said to him, "Venerable Ananda, sir, we're householders. And we indulge in sensual pleasures. We get a lot of enjoyment and delight from our sense pleasures. So for us, this teaching about renunciation, it seems like a sheer drop-off. And yet I've heard that the hearts of even the very young monks seem to leap up with joy at renunciation. And these monks grow confident and steadfast and firm in their practice, and they see renunciation as peace." And Tapusa says, "This is really hard for me to understand because it seems like this discipline of renunciation is just really contrary to the great mass of people. And to me, certainly, not something that we want to do or might even be able to do. And so Ananda answered him, this really calls for a talk. Let's go see the Buddha and see how he explains it. So Ananda really appreciated the seriousness of this question. So they went into the wood where the Buddha was meditating and bowed to him and sat down. And then Ananda told the Buddha about Tipusa's question about renunciation. How Tipusa saw that although it might be a joyful practice for the monks, it seemed really difficult to him and contrary to the nature of householders like himself, who naturally, you know, were surrounded by and enjoyed their sense pleasures. And the Buddha replied, so it is, Ananda, so it is. And then he went on, even I myself, before my awakening, when I was still an unawakened bodhisattva, thought, renunciation is good, seclusion is good, but my heart didn't leap up at renunciation, and it didn't grow confident or steadfast or firm or see renunciation as peace. So the Buddha himself, you know, he saw that this was a good thing, but even he was not all that enthusiastic at first. And so he goes on to say, so I ask myself, why doesn't my heart leap up at the thought of renunciation? And then the thought occurred to me, I haven't really seen the drawback of sense pleasures. I haven't investigated them thoroughly myself. I haven't understood the reward of renunciation. That's why my heart doesn't leap up at renunciation and doesn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, or see it as peace. But he said, you know, perhaps if I really did pursue this theme, I would feel differently. And then the Buddha went on to say that later, after he really had explored the sense pleasures thoroughly and really seen their drawbacks and seen the rewards of renunciation, then when he really understood for himself, his heart did leap with joy at the practice of renunciation, and he saw it as peace. So in this story, the Buddha is telling Tipusa and telling us too that our hesitancy about renunciation is perfectly natural. He felt this himself. And he's encouraging us to do our own investigation into sense pleasures and renunciation, so we can appreciate the value of this parami. And he's suggesting too that if we do that, as we do that, our attitude towards renunciation will change from one of like kind of a dread and resistance and not wanting to do that to one of appreciation and joy. And as I've been reflecting on this parami, I've been thinking that a good way to begin this exploration is to recognize the ways in which we're already practicing and cultivating the parami of renunciation as we work to develop generosity and sila. In his book on the paramis, Ajahn Suchito talks about generosity, ethical conduct, and renunciation as these three foundational paramis that work together to prepare us to be interested in and to really appreciate and understand the rest of the teachings of the Buddha. You know, so if we have this foundation, we can understand the teachings of the Four Noble Truths and really get onto the path to liberation. So if we're practicing these three paramis, they help us to cultivate an attitude of kindness toward all beings, and a sense that, you know, just acquiring more and more and more isn't necessarily the way to happiness. And I think you can probably see from your own experience how these three paramis are related and how renunciation really supports our development of generosity and ethical conduct. And so as you start your exploration of renunciation this week, you might find that this parami really feels pretty familiar to you, because as you've been practicing generosity and sila over the past couple months, you've been practicing renunciation too. And, you know, there's some good examples of this. When you give away something, you still feel a bit of attachment to, even if you don't really need it or use it very much, you're practicing renunciation. When you give a gift of dana, you can see that as a form of renunciation, since you're letting go of the other things you might have done with that time or that money to offer it in service of the Dharma. And when we practice sila, we know we have lots of moments of renunciation. You know, when we resist making that not very kind comment we're tempted to make, when somebody annoys us, or when we refrain from that glass of wine so we can keep our mind clear, or when we choose to come to Sims on Monday night instead of, you know, binging on that oh, so compelling new Netflix series that we just love, you know, all those times we're practicing renunciation. And in Norman Fisher's book, he mentions this three pure precepts. And the first of these, I vow to refrain from harmful conduct. Well, that most definitely is a practice of renunciation. So you can see how renunciation really fits in with these other two paramis. And Ajahn Sucitto also says, as Lauren mentioned last month, that when we're cultivating the paramis, we need three qualities: empathy, inner strength, and clarity. And I think this parami of renunciation definitely is an inner strength, this strength to refrain from following our impulses when we know they're likely to get us into trouble. So as I mentioned earlier, when we think about renunciation, we often think about, you know, giving up, you know, giving up worldly pleasures, deprivation maybe, but we can see that renunciation isn't about depriving ourselves of something just for the sake of depriving ourselves. It's because we really see the benefits of restraint. So this is one form of renunciation, refraining from harmful behavior, from doing things that hurt ourselves or hurt others, or hanging on to things that we don't really need and could share with each other, with others. But renunciation isn't only about behaviors and things. It could involve attitudes and mind states too. And we can see that it really supports us in developing the other paramis in addition to generosity and sila. When we practice patience, for example, we let go of our desire to have what we want when we want it. When we practice determination, we let go of our doubt and indecision and our desire to just give up and quit because things seem too hard. When we practice loving kindness, we're letting go of our tendencies toward ill will and jealousy. When we practice equanimity, we're letting go of our need to be in control and to fix things that really aren't ours to fix. When we practice energy, we're letting go of our tendencies to sluggishness. So we can see that renunciation plays a really important role in cultivating all of the other paramis. And it also applies to attitudes and mind states that aren't specifically, you know, mentioned as paramis. You know, an example I can think of is the advice that Philip Moffat gave us in his last retreat when he was with us in December, that we should, in our practice, we would do well to renounce the judging mind, the comparing mind, and the fixing mind. And I keep remembering that and see how useful that kind of renunciation is. And it's good to remember, too, that renunciation isn't only about refraining from behaviors or mind states that might be harmful or unskillful. We might also refrain from activities that are perfectly fine and perfectly acceptable, so we can make time and space for something that's even more valuable. And for example, we do this when we're on retreat, when we refrain from speaking and maintain the noble silence, and when we refrain from reading or checking our phones or those kinds of things. It isn't because talking is bad or reading is bad. It's more that we refrain from those things for a period of time so we can really concentrate on our meditation practice and pay attention to what's going on in our bodies and minds. And also so we can give others the solitude they need to do the same thing. And as I mentioned before, in our daily lives, we might give up watching a TV show we like to go to Sims on Monday night, or we might sacrifice half an hour of sleep in the morning to get up and sit. Not because that TV show is bad or sleeping is bad, but because these other things are even more beneficial. And as another example, when we sit in meditation, just as we were doing in our sit earlier this morning, with the attention on the breath, and renounce our distracting thoughts, we do this not because thinking is bad, but in order to steady our minds and develop concentration. So when you consider renunciation this month, you might think about that as aspect of renunciation too, not only from the refraining of unskillful things, but refraining from perfectly acceptable things to make time and space for activities that are even more beneficial. And another reason for renunciation is just to simplify. Ajahn Suchito talks about it as being able to distinguish between needs and wants. So we can make sure our needs are met, but worry less about whether or not we have those wants. And what's especially important too, when we really make this distinction, we know that we can feel contented and happy whether we get the wants or not, and can develop an attitude of, yes, you know, that would be nice, but if it doesn't happen, that's okay too. And in a way, this sense of, it would be nice to have it, but I don't really need it, really ties in with the sense of abundance too, that helps us to be generous, to recognize how many good things we already have, and to realize we don't need so much more. So there's the aspect of renunciation, of refraining from harmful things, the aspect of refraining from perfectly okay things just to make time and space for even more beneficial things, refraining not only from things or activities, but from habits of mind, and refraining to simplify our lives so our needs are and wants are few and easily meant. So those are some things to think about in our practice of renunciation. And so what I would suggest for this coming week would be that we just continue to strengthen our practices of generosity and sila, and sort of ease into this parami of renunciation by noticing all the ways in which we're already practicing renunciation, just by working on these other paramis. And also really recognizing how much support this practice of renunciation gives us in learning how to live a life that is kind and beneficial and helpful to us and helpful to others. So, you know, any of these aspects of renunciation, refraining from harmful action, refraining to make time for other things, refraining from habits of mind that don't serve us, simplifying, any of these or all of these would be really fertile ground for practice this week. so we can try this out, practice and see how it goes. It might not be easy. The Buddha himself admitted that this practice of renunciation isn't always easy. You probably won't be successful at letting go of whatever you wish to renounce all the time. But every time you make that effort to refrain, you build inner strength, you build new habit patterns, and you feel the relief of not being the prisoner of your impulses. And maybe too, as you go along once in a while, you will find that your heart too really leaps at the thought of renunciation. And you will feel being firm and steady in your practice, and you'll find peace. May it be so. So let's just sit for a moment and maybe reflect a bit on this parami of renunciation. So thanks everybody for being here. Thanks for paying attention. And now we have some time for our group discussion. So if anybody needs to leave, if you have other things that are calling you on this morning and you can't stay with us, this would be a nice time to say goodbye. And we're really happy that we had you here for the sit and the talk. And it's been really great to see you. And for everyone who is able to stay, which it looks like, you know, quite a few of us here. For our discussion today, I would invite you to share about this topic of renunciation. And maybe you might start by talking something about your own feelings and attitudes about this practice. You know, does it make your heart leap, or are you feeling a little bit less enthusiastic as we begin this month? And you might also talk about ways that you notice that you've been practicing renunciation already as you've been working with generosity and sila, and maybe how it's been a help and support. If that's something that is clear to you, just even reflecting in this short time. Or anything else that comes up is fair game for discussion on this topic. So I'll break you up into groups, and we'll have about 15 minutes or so. Hi, everybody. Here we all are, coming back. I think we've all pretty much all returned. So now we have some time for discussion. If anyone would like to, let's see. Oh, to share. Oh, and Charlotte, you're already right in there ready.
Oh. So,
yeah, please go right ahead.
I really love the, I'm sure I've heard it before, but not this, not now. Boy, that's going to be useful for me. I have a tendency sometimes when I wake up in the middle of the night, I'll grab my iPhone and get on Facebook. Well, that's not good for me and my mind. And so anyway, I made this. It's backwards, but it just says not this, not now. And I'm going to put it right on my iPhone and rubber band it so that trying to pick it up, there's a barrier. So thank you.
Oh, that's great. I think that all of us can benefit from that. I, you know, that's really nice. And, you know, I sort of like that, not now too, because there's this sense of, you know, there might be other times when it's perfectly okay, but right now, yeah, thank you for sharing that. That's sweet. I should do that for waking up and reading in bed. Not now. Thank you, Charlotte. And let's see, Lauren has her hand raised here.
Well, I really liked the four ways of renouncing that you listed, and I wrote them down. I want to see if I'm right, or because I want to remember them. They were helpful. So refraining from something that's harmful, like intoxicants, that would just be an example. Refraining which leads to simplification. Mm-hmm. Refraining mind states. Is that another one? Mm-hmm. And refraining to make way for more beneficial things.
Mm-hmm.
Are those the four?
Exactly. Those are the four. Yeah.
That was really helpful. And in the group, I shared how difficult it is to refrain from mind states, mm-hmm. because they're so conditioned and, we're taught, you cannot just make your mind do something. And so I was thinking that for me, let's say the mind state of judging and comparing, I have to let go long enough to move to a wholesome mind state like metta or allowing. I have to practice meditation. I mean, they're big behavioral, wholesome actions to take the place, but also that it requires a lot of patience because they don't go away immediately. They come back, and also determination because they come back. And so that's a very challenging area for me, and I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, I think it's a challenging area for everybody, because just as you say, these things, we can't necessarily control when they arise. We might be able to control to some extent how much attention we give to them, how much truth we give to them, how much we indulge in them, And as you say, whether we try to find other ways to bring our minds to a different attitude, like metta rather than annoyance and dislike. But they are really challenging. They are really challenging. I agree.
So, Charlotte, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just saying Charlotte asked what the fourth one was, so I'll just say it was to make way for more beneficial things.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, thank you. Suze?
I love that Lauren has raised this issue of the mind states, because, wow, they really are hard. And I just wanted to add that I've tried to add a step before moving to something like metta, is to really feel what this negative or afflictive mind state feels like. And get a real sense of its lack of benefit, because it is seductive. It's so seductive and it's so familiar. And so, we go there and there's all these interesting stories that come out of it. But then just to pause and go, how does it really feel? And so that's something that I've been just kind of playing with a little, and it's hard. Because the seduction is fighting with the other, is wanting more attention. But anyway, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, thank you for your good suggestion, too. And it makes me think, too, about how when we actually, as you were talking about, turn the attention to that and actually notice what it really feels like, we're just that right there, just bringing mindfulness to it, is enough to shift things. So we're not really in that mind state. We're in a different mind state. And it reminded me too of the Buddha talking about how, you know, it's really hard for us to be willing to renounce anything unless we really understand the drawbacks and the benefits of refraining. If we don't really get it, we're not going to want to do it. And so, you know, what you're talking about and really investigating that is very important. So thank you for your suggestions. Thanks. Anyone else have anything they would like to share? Oh, let's see. Shaila, are you waving your hand?
Yes, I am. I really like being in the group with two other ladies, and we had things in common to talk about. And I wanted to tell you about the positive feelings I got from them.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear that. I think a lot of us feel that way, that having that time to share really helps us, you know, to see other people's points of view and know that we aren't the only ones that have certain feelings.
Right. Yeah. And somehow we are talking the same language, you know. And so that makes for the good feeling.
Good. Thank you.
I do have one thing I want to ask you, not taking up your time here, but later on. Is there a way of writing to you?
You can, if you want to, if it's short, you can put it in the chat, or you can also, by email, I have the email, the Sims.
Okay, if I could have that, because it's too long to put it in a chat box. So if I could have your email, I will put it in my email.
Yeah, you can, our Sims, I think this is the right format for the Sims email. I'm pretty sure.
Can you put it on the screen again, Lindahl?
It's in the chat there.
Oh, okay, I'll look.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Thank you.
There's a typo in the chat. Instead of, it should be Lindahl at SeattleInsight.org, whatever. I don't think you can pronounce.
Oh, yeah, that's an N, not an H. Right. Yeah. Seattle Insight, yes, right, yeah.
I'm seeing Lindahl at SeattleInsight.org. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I will send it. And you're doing the next one, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So in case something, I'm not writing it down correctly.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate today's guidance for this meditation.
Okay. Thank you. And very quickly, I don't want to take up too much time before our announcements, but Maria, you can be our final sharing.
I asked a quick question from our small group, and I really appreciate what we discussed there, but I think I still want to ask the same question because I don't know that answer. It's the difference between renunciation and desire.
Could you say that one more time?
What's the difference between renunciation and desire?
Renunciation, I would say, is being willing to not follow every desire. To sort of, even if the desire is there, if we see that it's not going in a helpful place, to not act on it, to not follow it.
Thank you.
Exactly. Because we're always going to have desire, but Yeah. We don't necessarily have to follow up every desire. So thank you. Yeah. Now I better stop so I can quickly do the announcements. We might run over by a minute or two.